We're in 1 Samuel chapter 18 this morning, 1 Samuel chapter 18, which starts off like the events that it describes are sort of coming out of nowhere. And if we were to just begin there and keep going, we might be a little confused as to why this is happening. But we don't do that. We don't start somewhere and just plug along, do we? We look around and see what's going on, and that's exactly what we're going to do here. So 1 Samuel chapter 18 and verses 1 through 4 is our text. We can tell that this is already pointing back to something from verse 1. It says, 1 Samuel 18 and verse 1, it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. So we already know that something is going on here that has led to what we're looking at in 1 Samuel 18, 1 to 4. So what do? Well, we go back and we take a look and see what's going on. When we do that, we see that there is a reason why Jonathan is making this covenant that he makes with David. And it actually goes all the way back to 1 Samuel chapter 14, where Jonathan goes against all odds. He takes just his armor bearer, and he goes up against at least dozens of Philistine enemy soldiers. And in a matter of a short time, Jonathan, assisted by his armor bearer, kills 20 of the Philistines. And so Jonathan was the kind of guy that stepped out in faith. He was the kind of guy that did not look at the odds and say, there's no way this can work. He was the kind of guy that said, this is what God wants me to do. I have faith in God. I want to take care of God's people. There's a job to do. Yeah, it looks like it might be tough, but I'm going to go do it. And he did it. And he succeeded at it. And that's 1 Samuel 14. And then we come up to 1 Samuel chapter 17. And 1 Samuel 17 is about, you remember David and who? David fought Goliath, right? The giant Philistine warrior. Been a warrior for decades. He's bigger than everybody else, anywhere from 6'6 to 9'9. We don't know how tall he was, but he was huge. He was big enough to carry around 125 pounds of armor and a big, humongous spear, right? And a big sword. So he's really intimidating. And when he comes out to fight, all of the other soldiers in the camp of Israel are shaking in their tents. They don't want anything to do with this guy. But then who steps up? David, who was not a kid, like we often get the idea, but he was a young man without as much experience, without the height and the muscle, without all that stuff. And he says, I'll fight him. And he does. And he beats him. And he cuts off his head. And so Jonathan, who had gone to battle before against all odds, Jonathan was one of the soldiers in 1 Samuel 17 shaking in his tent. Jonathan was a man of faith, but there were some things even Jonathan was not going to attempt. And then he saw David do it, and he was impressed by it. Not only was he impressed, he loved David for who he was and what he did. And so because of that, Jonathan is going to make a covenant, a promise, a contract, an agreement, a commitment to David. Because he and David shared a common tie. They love God. They love the people of God. They're willing to step out in faith to serve God. They've got something in common. But there's more to it than that. There's also the matter of David's uncommon trust in God. Jonathan saw in David a degree of faith he did not have but wanted. So what did he say to himself? I know one way I can increase my faith. I can get around other people who have a lot of it. So what I'm going to do, Jonathan said, is I'm going to establish a covenant between David and me based on our common faith and devotion to God and his people, But I'm going to enter into that covenant for the purpose of up-leveling my own faith. So what I thought about doing here was trying to be all clever and build the sermon and talk about Jonathan and David, and then toward the end of it, spring the big reveal, which was what we're really talking about here is our relationship as Christians and what the church is all about. But I just can't wait. I can't wait to get there. So I want to tell you now, what we're talking about is the church. The reason that I love the church is because when I come here, and this is not the only place we do church. I got that. But here we are, so let's talk about it. What I love about coming here is that I'm going to be around a lot of other people who have my common faith. I love God, and I have faith in God. I love the people of God. I love the purpose of God. And I love being with other people who I have that in common with. The other thing I love about the church is that I get to come to a place where there are people that I look up to. Well, why do you look up to somebody? Because they're on a level above you. That's what it means, right? Why do I look up to somebody? Because they're above me. And what I get when I come here is not only people that I have something in common with, but I get to get with people who have an uncommon something that I want. Whether it's more faith, more wisdom, more righteousness, more godliness, more self-control, more love, more goodness, more peace. You see what I'm saying? That's the awesome thing about the church. Not that we come here and check boxes. Not that we come here and go, okay, I did my job today. Checked it off for another week. The awesome thing about church is that we're here together with people who share a common faith, but there are people here that have something uncommon that you and I need more of. And so we get to hang out together, and what does that do? That builds us up. That builds us up. That's what I love about the church, and that's what we're talking about. Remember, we talked about this, applying all of this to the church last week. The height of your success will be determined by the depth of your friendships. The great, truly great, late Jim Rohn said, "You are the average of the five people that you spend the most time with." Now, we can quibble about, is that scientific, and does it really work that way? And we could quibble about that, but do you see what he's saying? The people that you spend time with are having an effect on you spiritually and mentally and every other way. Studies have shown, I find this fascinating, studies have shown that not only your personal friends have an effect on your mental and physical health, but the friends of your friends affect your mental and physical health. That's crazy to me. And I know, Neil, it sounds crazy, but it's been proven. It's been proven. So, whether anybody knows it or not, the people that Rod knows that I don't know are having an impact on me. Because that's how social networks work. And the people that Miss Belva knows that I don't know are having an impact on me. So she's hanging out with some people and she's, you know, being influenced. And then she's coming and hanging out with me, and that's impacting me. Did you know that? So what does that say about those who are in your tightest circle? The people that you're spending the most time with are impacting you in every way, including spiritually. So the height of your success is going to be determined by the depth of your friendships. If that's true of you as an individual, when we all come together, then it's going to affect all of us. Really important to understand that. So Jonathan makes this covenant with David. And in order to establish the covenant, he gives David some presents. He gives David some gifts. It says in verse 3 that Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan stripped himself of, notice very carefully, the wording of it, because this is all important. He stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David with, notice it, his armor, including his sword, his bow, and his belt. So notice the robe. Clothing is such an awesome gift of friendship, isn't it? Isn't clothing an awesome gift of friendship? I had, years ago, when I was much heavier than I am now, a friend of mine, many of you know him, a friend of mine stopped by and he said, "Hey, I brought you a shirt if you want it." He said, "When I put it on, it swallows me up, but I think it'll fit you just right. Do you want it?" I said, "Dude, I don't ever turn down free clothes." And it was nice. It was a nice shirt. And he said, just as a side, he said, "Isn't it funny?" He said, "How guys are different from girls." He said, "If one woman walked up to another woman and said, 'Do you want this dress? It's huge on me, but I think it'll fit you just right.'" He said there would be a fight. But guys are like, "Yeah, let me have it." Isn't that funny? Anyway, I took it and wore it for a very long time. Until it swallowed me up. Then I gave it to a friend. But isn't clothing such an awesome... First of all, just the giving of gifts is all about, like, is all wrapped up in friendship. It's all wrapped up in agreements. It's all wrapped up in that, right? You go down to the bank, you open up an account, what do they give you? Right? Used to be a toaster, right? They give you a gift, right? You have an agreement, now you get a gift. And so gifts are all wrapped up in friendship and agreements and contracts and those kinds of things. But man, clothing, what an awesome gift that is, because it does two things. It gives you something that you have to have. You got to have clothes. Please wear them, right? Don't go outside without them. You got to have clothes. You got to have clothes. So it's a benefit to you. Here's the awesome thing, though, about giving the gift of clothing. What happens every time you see it in the closet or put it on? What happens every time you see it in the closet or put it on? Miss Belville walked in, and Miss Belville was always put together. I've never seen Miss Belville. I've stopped in on Miss Belville when she was not expected. She's still put together. And how she does that. Hair's perfect. Cute little outfit. Lipstick. Earrings. So Miss Belville walks in this morning and I said, "You look amazing. I love that coat." She's got this black coat. I said, "I love that coat." She said, "Do you really?" I said, "I do." You know what she told me? It was Mama's. Miss Flossie's. You think every time Miss Belva sees that coat in the closet, what does she do? Thinks about Miss Flossie. And she thinks about what an amazing mom she was, grandma she was. She probably thinks about seeing her in it. She thinks about, you know, getting it. She thinks about Mama, right? How awesome is that? The pants I'm wearing this morning, I got from Mama. Not her mama, my mama. I got some things from Miss Flossie. Well, really, I went by to see her one day and just took them. But anyway, I got some things from this one, but my mom bought me these pants. They're just a basic black pair of pants, no biggie. But guess what happens every time I see them in my closet or put them on? I think of my mother. My daughter got me a shirt. There's a TV show that we love together, and we talk about all the time. My daughter got me a shirt from the TV show. Every time I see it, every time I put it on, I think of her. Isn't clothing such an amazing gift? And so Jonathan, notice, Jonathan doesn't just give David a robe. Notice that. Jonathan doesn't just give David a robe. What does he give him? The robe that was on him. How do we describe somebody who's a really great friend? How do we describe somebody that you can trust to take care of you no matter what? They would give you the what? Shirt right off their back. I personally have never witnessed or done or received that, but David did. He literally did. Jonathan walked up and went, "Hey, here you go." And gave it right to him. Isn't that amazing? Well, now Jonathan doesn't have it. I'm sure he's got others. He's not walking around robeless for the rest of his life. I'm sure he has others. But that's his robe. And now he has to replace it. Right? And in that day and time, even if you're the son of a king, in that day and time, you didn't have a closet full of clothing like you and I do. Right? You walk into our closet area. I had to take half of Tracy's closet to put some of my clothes in. But they didn't have that. And so now Jonathan gives up his robe. But what happens every time David sees that robe? What happens every time he puts it on? What is he reminded of? Jonathan and I have a covenant together. That's all super cool. I love the robe thing. This is even more cool. This is even more cool. So, not only does Jonathan give David his robe, he gives him four more things. He gives him what? His armor, his bow, his sword, and his belt, which was part of the warrior's gear. Jonathan wanted to give David gifts, but he didn't just go on Amazon and pick something. And goodness knows, and I'm sorry if I offend, but goodness knows he didn't just go get one of those tins of popcorn. You know somebody doesn't know what to get you when you unwrap it and it's a tin of popcorn. I mean, I appreciate it. Not that anybody's done this for me recently. Now you know not to. Or now that's all you're going to do. I don't know. But once the caramel corn is gone, what's the point? That's only a third of it anyway. He doesn't give him a tin of popcorn, right? What does he do? He gives him gifts that are very thoughtful and very intentional that make promises. Here's the thing about the gifts. This is so awesome. Here's the thing about the gifts. The gifts of Jonathan that he gives to David are promises. The gifts that Jonathan gives to David, and you warrior guys, you Marines, you soldiers, and military types, maybe law enforcement types, I think will really get this more so. But the gifts that he gives to David are promises. He gives David his weapons. What does that promise? I'm not going to hurt you. I'll never hurt you. He gives David his weapons. Now he can't hurt him. He can't hurt him now. Because David now has his weapons. He has his sword and he has his bow. No weapons, no harm, right? He can't hurt him. You know, in a tense situation where police are involved, what do they want you to do? Right? What do they want you to do? They want to show you to show them that you have no weapon. So what do they want you to do? They want to see your hands. I want to see your hands. I want you to show me that what? You don't have a weapon. Jonathan has given his power to hurt David to David, which means I trust you. And I'm going to be vulnerable to you because now not only does Jonathan not have weapons, what else does he not have? Armor. He doesn't have armor. He's completely defenseless against anything that David might do to him. He's given up his armor and now he's vulnerable. Now he's vulnerable. How willing would you be to give me before you leave today your social security number, all of your passwords, and all of your login information, particularly for those big accounts, retirement, that sort of thing? How willing would you be? So most of us don't get the armor thing, the sword thing. How willing would you be to, before you left today, give me a piece of paper with your social, your passwords, and your login? Say, here you go. Probably my best friend in here, outside of my family, and maybe not even my family, would do that. That's a lot of what? It's a lot of trust. Because what have you done? You have given somebody the power to hurt you. Years ago, I asked a friend of mine, I'm a technological moron. And years ago, I asked a friend of mine who's really good with that stuff if he would help me with some technological stuff. And part of it involved entering my Social Security number. And so he asked for it. And I gave it to him because I trusted him completely. And then it wasn't too awful long after that until some things happened and I realized that it was a misplaced trust. That I should not have trusted him with that. And some things that he did to some other friends demonstrated that he now had the power to hurt me very badly. Thank God he never did. But he had the power because I had given him the power and made myself vulnerable. The third thing that Jonathan says to David is, I'm going to help you. What does he give him? Armor and weapons. Why does he need those? Because David is not only a shepherd, he's not only a guitar player, he's a what? He's a warrior. What does he need? He needs armor and he needs weapons. And now he has them. Not only thanks to Jonathan, but at Jonathan's expense. Those are the promises. And these are the promises that as Christians we need to make to each other. This is a picture of the church. Two friends who share faith in God and love for God's people and devotion to God's purpose have entered into a covenant together. That's all the church is. We need to make each other the promise, I will never hurt you. I will not hurt you. This is what Isaiah was prophesying in Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 4. When Isaiah, in about 700 years before the church was established, Isaiah looked forward to it. And he said that in that body of people, they're going to come in carrying swords. But when they get in there, what are they going to do? They're going to hammer them into, what's a plowshare? And a plowshare is that sharp thing like on a plow that somebody would use, or even a motorbike. It's the sharp thing on a plow that digs into the ground and cuts up the furrow. That's the sharp thing that does it. So I want you to see the picture. He doesn't say when they come into the kingdom, they're going to throw their weapons away. He says they're going to take their weapons and do what? Make them instruments of service. The thing I think about all the time with that is the words that we use. Before you become a Christian, you might use your words to hurt somebody else, right? Before I became a Christian, if I was angry with somebody, or I was we were angry with each other, I might use my words to attack them. But now that I'm a Christian, I'm going to use my words to reconcile with them. Right? If someone is struggling spiritually and failing, if I'm not a Christian, I might use my words to beat them down and call them a failure and call them a loser and ask them why they can't get it together, why they can't be more like me, why they can't do what I do. But as a Christian, I'm going to use those words and I'm going to build them up, beating swords into plowshares. The second promise we make, I trust you, so I'm going to be vulnerable to you. I trust you. James says in James chapter 5 and in verse 16, probably the most vulnerable act we could ever engage in. I can't think of a more vulnerable act than this. To get with another Christian and say, here is the sin I struggle with, and here is the sin I have committed. How vulnerable is that? How open, how much are you opening yourself up? We don't like vulnerability. All of us, to one degree or another, are behind a wall of some kind that keeps other people out from being able to hurt us to one degree or another. I don't like vulnerability. There is one thing that people sometimes say to each other that I will not do except for a handful of people in the world. Somebody walk up to you and they'll go, close your eyes and hold out your hand. Nope. Not doing it. Not doing it. Handful of people in the world that I would do that for. Because if you're asking me to close my eyes and hold out my hand, what you're about to put in there is something I don't want to see or touch. Think about that. When somebody says, close your eyes and put out your hand, that's really vulnerable. They could do anything. They could put something gross in it, stab it, bite it, hit it. I know the biting would be gross, wouldn't it? So you're becoming completely vulnerable. Well, you're probably like me. You've been hurt enough times to know that when somebody says that, you don't do it. Something else I will never do, I don't know that I've ever done it, and I certainly wouldn't do it now. Go to the beach and let anybody bury me up to the neck in sand. Not happening. For two reasons. Number one, I hate to be sandy. I really hate that. Number two, once you get me buried in there, I don't know what you're going to do. You might walk off and leave me. It might be low tide. That could be a real problem. I'm not going to do that because I don't like to be vulnerable that way. But if we want to achieve the most important things, vulnerability is a must. If you've got some medical procedure that's very serious and needs to be taken care of, what are they probably going to do before they cut you? They're probably going to put you under. They're probably going to put you to sleep, put you under anesthesia. Boy, talk about vulnerable. My concern isn't so much about when I'm totally knocked out. It's when I'm going in and coming out. Because I've been around that enough to know that people say some crazy things. Do you know what you said when you were coming out of anesthesia? No, and I don't want to know. People use that stuff against you. Right? If you want to get somewhere quickly and you've got to fly, what are you going to have to do? You're going to have to make yourself completely vulnerable and put yourself in the hands of the pilot. And if we want the deepest possible relationships, we're going to have to be vulnerable. The third promise, I will help you. And this is the promise that we make to each other in the church. Paul said in Ephesians 4, 15 to 16, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into Him who is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body being fitted, now notice, being fitted and held together by what? By what every joint supplies. According to the proper working of what? Each individual part. When you come into the church, we make you a promise. Far from hurting you, we're going to what? We're going to help you get to where you need to go. And so these are the promises that we make to one another. Now, let me just say this as an aside before I go on and quit. There's a lot of absolute language in there. I will never hurt you. I did that on purpose. I'll never hurt you. I'll trust you. I'll be vulnerable to you. I will help you. You and I both know that that's never going to happen perfectly. You and I both know that will never happen perfectly. So what do we do about that? Well, this is why the Bible talks so much about forgiveness. That's where forgiveness comes in. And we've got to be forgiving with one another. So I gave you this last week as a suggestion for just sort of a basic kind of forming relationships and staying in touch with each other and sort of as a first step to kind of move that direction. I think you would agree that for most of us, that's a pretty tame thing to ask. Now, I understand. And I was talking with a friend after we were done last time. And I said something, I think, that I didn't mean to say it maybe the way it was taken. What I said when I was done with this was, this is easy, anybody can do it. What I meant was, as far as the time commitment of it, I understand that for some people, this is hard because we struggle with relationships. So I understand it's not easy that way. But all in all, when it comes to a time commitment, this is pretty tame. And this is not going to get you too badly hurt, even if something goes awry. But I want to think about doing what Jonathan did. I want to think about us doing what Jonathan did. I want to think about us as a church committing to deeper relationships. Isn't this what Jonathan did? Jonathan didn't go up to David and say, hey, maybe we can text once or twice a week. He didn't go up to David and say, hey, let's connect at church once a week. They made a deep covenant with each other. So I just want to give you some suggestions and ask you to think about doing with another Christian what Jonathan did. Number one, just think about it. Just be open to it. You might say, I don't have the time. I don't have the interest. I don't want to go that deep. I don't want to be that involved. I don't want anybody in my business that way. I get all of that. I'm just asking you to consider being open to it. Secondly, finding the right person. Jonathan did not go from tent to tent and fire to fire in the camp telling everybody his business. And I really wish that other people wouldn't do that either. Jonathan did not go on Facebook and post all of his inmost struggles and problems and thoughts. And boy, do I wish some people wouldn't do that either. Jonathan found someone he could trust and formed a relationship, a deep relationship with that person. Maybe you are a person who is new to our church, or you're a new Christian, or you struggle forming relationships, or you're an introvert, or you've been hurt and you still are a little apprehensive. Nothing wrong with any of that. Just lean into it. Just do a little more. Stay a little longer after church and talk to one more person. Get here a little bit earlier and talk to one more person. Write a card of encouragement. No face-to-face, no awkwardness on the phone. Write a card of encouragement. Just lean into it. But if you have been a Christian for a long time, it's time to make it happen. If you have been a Christian for a long time, and you don't have some depth to your relationships, it's time to get there. And then, as always, manage your expectations, be patient with others, and be willing to forgive, because it's not going to go perfectly. But we've got to understand that the height of our success individually and as a church will depend upon the depth of our friendships. Lord willing, next Sunday morning, we're going to talk about another friendship, a friendship between the prophet Elisha and the Shunammite woman. It's a very simple story. It's a story that's easy to overlook, but it's a story that has a lot of meaning for being a friend and a servant to other people. There's the text, 2 Kings 4. I hope you'll read that. And then tonight, I'm super excited about the sermon tonight from Hosea chapter 12. I bet you never heard anybody say that before. I'm excited about a sermon from Hosea 12. I don't think I've ever said that before. But there's something in Hosea 12 that we're going to talk about tonight at the church at Newport. We'd love for you to join us. It's not very far away. Maybe you live that direction and it's easier for you. We'd love for you to join us tonight at Newport, 6 o'clock. We're going to meet with the church at Newport, as we do once a month. And we're going to talk about an aspect of faith that I had never thought about before until fairly recently. An aspect of faith, a relationship with God that gets next to no coverage. next to no discussion. People just don't talk about it. I didn't think much about it until not too long ago. And then I ran across it again in Hebrews 12, and I'm super excited to talk about it tonight. I hope you'll be there. If you need directions, let us know. So what we talked about this morning is Jonathan's covenant with David. That was expressed and affirmed and confirmed and initiated and solidified with gifts. And those gifts were made to make promises to David. And all of this is a model for our mutual Christian covenant promises. This is what we need to be doing together. And of course, all of this is appropriate because all of this is nothing but a picture of Jesus' covenant with us. That's all that is. Everything that Jonathan did with David and everything that I'm talking about us doing with each other is nothing but a model of Jesus' covenant with us. You know that Jesus, before we became a Christian, we were in a relationship of hostility to Jesus. The Bible says that. While we were sinners, we were hostile toward God, and God was angry at us. What did Jesus do? He gave up his armor, and he gave up his weapons, and he said, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm instead going to be vulnerable to you. How did Jesus come into the world? As a what? As a baby. Talk about vulnerable. And he almost got killed for it. Jesus came into the world as a baby. He put himself, during his ministry, at the mercy of those around him, most of whom hated him. At least the powerful ones did. And then he became vulnerable even to the point of an agonizing death. He agreed, even though he's God and could snap his fingers or bat his eye and obliterate all of it, he willingly went to the cross to suffer the most horrible imaginable death and died for us in order to help us. And now, and he's not done. Now, we're in a relationship with him. Well, you know what being in a relationship does. Being in a relationship with somebody makes you vulnerable because now you're subject to their misbehavior, their indifference, their rejection. Jesus has made himself vulnerable to all of that from us. And he gets it from us. We do that to him. But he laid down his weapons. He became vulnerable. He died for us. And now he's helping us. But this is for those, please notice the top of that slide. It is for those who are in covenant with him. It is for those who have entered into a relationship with him. If you haven't done that, we'd love to help you to do that. We'll talk to you about what you need to do. We will study with you. Or if you're ready, we can baptize you now into a relationship with Christ. If you are a Christian, you might need help, but you don't want to be judged. You don't want to be squashed. You don't want to be hollered at. Right, you don't want to be raked over the coals or mistreated. And maybe you're worried about that. You look concerned about that. Well, what I've done is, you know, or what I'm struggling with is pretty big, or what I've done is whatever. And you think, well, I don't know. I'm afraid to get help because of how they'll respond. You don't have to worry about that. You don't have to worry about that. Because as the preacher and as the elders, we've made a commitment to be like Jonathan was to David. Kind, open, honest, vulnerable, helpful. And we'll help you in whatever way that we can. So as we sing this song, what was the number again? 392. 392 is our song. Wonderful thing to imagine singing and being happy. How wonderful is that? The only way to do it is to have a relationship with God through His Son. So as you think about that, as we're singing the song, if you decide we can help you, we'd love to talk to you privately after church, or you can come forward, take a seat on the front as we stand and sing.